Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll learn about the Minnesota Army National Guard's Warrant Officer Program, and we'll get an update from Minnesota's Vietnam Veterans of America. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Thanksgiving Day is positioned at the end of the harvest season. It is an annual federal holiday meant to express thanks for one's material and spiritual possessions. In fact, this tradition started during the Civil War in 1863 when President Abraham Lincoln proclaimed, and I quote, "A national day of thanksgiving and praise to our beneficent Father who dwelleth in the heavens." The event that some Americans commonly call the first Thanksgiving was celebrated by the Pilgrims to give thanks to God for guiding them safely to the New World. That first Thanksgiving lasted 3 days and was shared between Pilgrims and Native Americans. While I truly enjoy turkey and a day with my family, I don't know if a three-day festival is in the cards for most families. That BlackBerry doesn't stop buzzing, the emails keep coming, and needs of the family and home creep up. And now the holiday season is upon us, and there is so much to do. They say that of all the holidays on the American calendar, Thanksgiving and Christmas are the ones with the most connection to family. I encourage you to make that true for your family. Make a commitment to put them first during this holiday season. President Abraham Lincoln was onto something. Let's all try to give a little thanks and praise.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Minnesota National Guard's Command Chief Warrant Officer, CW4 Kip Knutson. Chief, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Chief, can you tell me a little bit, how many years have you been in the military?
I've been in 38 years in the military, and I got about 25 years as a warrant officer.
And before that, were you enlisted or officer?
I was enlisted for about 12 years. So I was active duty for 7 years, and then I became a warrant officer in 1991, after about 12 years.
And what attracted you to the warrant officer
program? Well, I've always wanted to further my career and kind of challenge myself as to be a technical expert. I like doing the technical stuff. So becoming a warrant officer is a chance for me to be a leader in the technical field and also grow, get more training and to lead and challenge myself.
So, Chief, we've had for 5 years now, we've had a lot of military personnel on the show, and I think we had Chief Panos on some time ago. But a lot of our listeners are probably not aware of the Warrant Officer Program in the Minnesota National Guard. We have the officers on, and people understand who officers are, and we have enlisted folks on, we have the Command Sergeant Major on, but the Warrant Officer Program, what is it, and what mission does it serve?
Well, the Warrant Officer Program, the Warrant Officers serve as technical leaders and advisors to commanders. They're more of a specialized in a certain particular field. So they're the ones where commanders will come and go in a unit, but the warrant officer is pretty much there as a technical advisor and leader and also helps to mentor junior NCOs and other officers in that certain field.
Now let's see if we can understand that from a career track. When we watch the officers as they get promoted from lieutenant, captain, major on up, seems like every couple of years they change commands, they move around, and they gain all this special knowledge in all these different positions. And then on the enlisted side, they might have a specific MOS or a specialty, but occasionally they change to a different one, or there's another job opening, or they go to another unit. The warrant officers, do you provide the continuity while all these people are moving around?
We provide the continuity of having the stability for that career field and the specialty MOS for a specialty. Yes, we do. So the warrant officer is always there. He stays in one particular discipline or career track, and so he's always there as the continuity, as the base for advising commanders as they come and go, and to keep the continuity of the unit going on track to be the problem solver and the advisor and the project manager on certain projects and tasks, and he's there just to solve the problems and advise.
Now, from a rank standpoint, do the warrant officers, are they in between the enlisted and the officers?
Warrant officers assess from the NCO rank. So most warrant officers assess, they're either prior NCOs, usually E5s, E6s, E7s, and they fit right below the commissioned officers and right above the enlisted officers, so right in between the two.
So it's a move up from the enlisted
Correct.
Ranks.
Yeah, exactly. It's more if you want to specialize in your technical field, and you want to challenge yourself, be more of a technical leader and advisor, then this is a challenge for you to take, because there's a need for that for strong advisors. It's because as things get more technically advanced, there's a need for technical experts that are out there managing our systems and giving sound advice to our officers.
So as a warrant officer, and you start out as a warrant officer one, is that
correct?
The low level?
Yes.
You might start at the company level and then move up to battalion and eventually move up to division, that type of a track?
Most of them, like the W-1s and W-2s, will be most assigned at the company level or battalion, depending on the certain specialty. Like for example, pilots, W-1s, W-2s, would be probably assigned to a flight company. But whereas like a maintenance warrant might be assigned to a battalion, usually there's only like one of those. There's only 271 warrant officer positions in the state, so it's very small numbers. So depending on the job specialty, there's some like aviation has like 90 positions in the state, and the judge advocates, there's only one. So depends on where it's at, but most will start out at the company level, but a lot of the smaller density MOS is probably at the battalion or brigade levels.
So as we said, from the continuity standpoint, you stay within that technical specialty,
correct, yep,
and you move up into the bigger organizations, but
right,
provide the same service only at a higher level,
yes,
as you advance through your career.
Yes, yes, that's correct.
And you advance to the top of the pile.
I advanced to the top of the pile,
as a command chief warrant officer.
Correct, yeah.
Now, what was your technical specialty?
Well, I started out technical specialty. I was an aviation maintenance technician, which started out, I was a helicopter crew chief on active duty. And after 12 years, I became a warrant officer, a 151 Alpha aviation maintenance technician. And I did that for 17 years. And then I had to reclassify to signal. My current MOS is a 255 Alpha, which is a information systems technician or an IT warrant. Reason being was that they reorganized aviation resources in the Guard. And we had four positions at one time and went down to one. So we had four warrant officers and one position. So I had to find a new home. So I chose IT because I liked working with computers and network systems. And so I did that since 2008, and I became the command chief in 2015.
So you actually did make a change in your technical specialty.
Yes, I did. Yeah. And that was a challenge because I had to go back through Warrant Officer Basic Course as a CW4. First time I went through it was 1991 as a warrant officer candidate. So it was a big change in the classes. And I was competing against other W-1s who had assessed from a particular career management field. So they were specialists as an NCO in that field, where I was entering a new field. So it was a steep learning curve, but it was a good challenge, and I enjoyed learning from it. And it was a real growth. And it's helped me as a command chief to have that experience where I can understand some of these warrant officers now going through the program, you know, what they have to go through.
That'd be like cold water hitting you in the face to kind of start over as a CW4.
Old man with all these young warrants. And so it was
they gave you a little push, did they?
Yeah, it was good. Challenged me.
We're speaking with the Minnesota National Guard Command Chief Warrant Officer Kip Knutson on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, the Command Chief Warrant Officer, what does that mean within the structure of the Minnesota National Guard?
The Command Chief Warrant is a senior warrant officer for the Minnesota Army National Guard. So, and I'm also the advisor to the Adjutant General and to the Major Subordinate Commanders, which is the Brigade Commander. So I'm on the Adjutant General's personal staff as his advisor, and I overlook the discipline, accession, training, development, diversity, inclusion, opportunities, as well as policies and procedures that affect the Minnesota Army National Guard.
So your whole technical specialty changed again, didn't it?
Yeah, so it's just, doing that. Also, getting out and talking to warrant officers, NCOs, and commanders across the state about any warrant officer issues that they might be having.
And how many warrant officers do we have in the Minnesota National Guard?
We have 241 right now.
Is that kind of a static number? Is that your limit?
It changes. No. We have 271 slots, so we have 30 vacancies right now. So there is a need. We have a neat need for warrant officers, especially in the signal and the MI fields are two areas that we need the most warrant officers in.
Okay, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Now, what are the general areas that those warrant officers are in? Is there some?
We have nine different branches, and they go on aviation, logistics, quartermaster, signal corps, military intelligence, engineers, field artillery. There's all different branches. Usually there's a, if you have an enlisted MOS, usually there's a warrant officer MOS that corresponds to that career management field.
So if you're a warrant officer and you're assigned to a company or you're assigned to a battalion, how do you interact with the commanders?
Well, usually you're on his personal staff, and you should be actually being there to advise, sitting in actually meetings, unlike your command update meetings and meetings like that, being involved in that process. So you're there as an advisor, as they're going through planning for certain exercises, that you're there to provide input for any technical advice or situations that you feel aren't thought out. You can inject your technical experience and advice to the commanders.
So you're providing more information to the commanders so that they can make informed decisions.
Exactly. Yep. And so and you're available to the commander if he's got any particular questions. You're there for him to get his answers, to answer the technical questions he might have.
Now, once that commander's made a decision and it affects your technical specialty, how do you implement the orders and the changes?
Say that again.
Once you've had a discussion, there's some issue that the commander's trying to sort out. He's taken your advice. He's taken the advice of the senior enlisted advisor. They make a decision. I understand how the senior enlisted advisor goes back and talks to the enlisted ranks and says, okay, we've made a change. Here's how we're going to do this. What part do you play in that?
Well, my part is to provide a candid response to the commander. It's not necessarily telling him what he wants to hear, but what he needs to hear. So as a technical leader and advisor, if his plans aren't correct, I have to tactfully say, sir, this is why it's not a good idea, and then tell him why, and then give him courses of action. Not tell him it's wrong, but tell him how to do it correctly. So it's not just saying something's wrong, but it's having the answers to what is his courses of action. So it's being there to give him advice and other better choices to make.
So I see. As that company commander or battalion commander changes, because they change every few years, you've been there throughout, or one of your warrant officers may have been there 10 or 20 years. And if he's trying to make a decision that maybe has already been discussed two or three other times over a decade, you can provide him with that background of kind of like where all the bodies are buried, and this is why we did it this way, sir. And, and then he can make a better informed decision, he or she.
The institutional knowledge about why things have happened, or saying we've been down this road once before and this was the result of that. So it's not a good idea to do that because of this.
So you provide some very good experience and provide that continuity and that level of explanation of why things are done.
Yes.
Fascinating. We're speaking with the Minnesota National Guard's Command Chief Warrant Officer, Kip Knutson, on Minnesota Military Radio. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today to the Minnesota National Guard's Command Chief Warrant Officer, Kip Knutson. Chief, I want to go back over this just a little bit. I think I missed the part on eligibility, who's eligible to become a warrant officer in the Minnesota National Guard. What are the requirements? Do they all come from the enlisted ranks?
Well, they all usually have to be at least an E5 or above, and they have to have a particular MOS to assess into. For example, a 42 Alpha, which is a personnel specialist, can assess as a 420 Alpha, personnel systems technician, but they can't assess as like a quartermaster or logistics. So their career management field becomes a technical expert, so that's kind of tracks what's available to them to assess into. And usually they have they have to be at least an E5 or an E6. It all depends on the proponent what they choose for their entrance criteria. They also have to have a secret clearance, at least a secret clearance, and usually about 4 years in their particular MOS.
So if I'm a E5 or an E6 in the Minnesota Army National Guard and I want to step up and become a warrant officer, do I go ask for that or do I get recruited by warrant officers that are already there? Makes that decision?
I would say, you need to talk to your chain of command through your leadership, through your first sergeant, your commander, and say, hey, I would really like to be a warrant officer. Or they should be out there asking you, say, hey, I see potential here. Have you thought about going as a warrant officer? Or I've also told my warrant officers out there to be out there talking to people and trying to find their replacement, trying to talk to NCOs when they're out there and trying to advertise the specialty.
So each of the 271 warrant officers that you currently have, as they approach the end of their career, or maybe two, three, 4 years before that, they should be looking around and see if they can find somebody that wants to take their position.
They should be looking around prior to that, even just looking to try to fill their ranks. If they see somebody with potential, they should be going out there talking to them and saying, "Hey, have you ever thought about going to warrant? This is why. Reason I chose to be a warrant officer is because I enjoy the challenge. I want to be a technical leader. I want to advance myself, and just all of the positive things to recruit NCOs to become warrant officers."
So it's just a separate ladder in your career, but allows you to stay within that specialty, and yet still step up in pay and step up in rank and be a valuable asset to the commanders that come and go because that's part of how the officers train themselves.
Right.
Okay. Now, you said you had 271 of these and nine different kind of specialties, and you also told me that I think you have about 30 vacancies right now?
We have 271 positions, okay, and we have 241 warrant officers filled. So we got 30 vacancies. And the greatest need we have is in the MI and the signal. Currently in the MI, we have 23 positions with only 12 of those filled.
MI.
Military Intelligence. I'm sorry, it's another acronym, so I'll apologize. MI is Military Intelligence. And there's five different MOSs, warrant officer MOSs in the MI. So a very specialized field for their specialty.
MOS is Army talk for your military specialty.
Occupation specialty. So whatever they were, and you have to have a particular military intelligence enlisted MOS to assess into that. So that's our greatest need. So if you're, we need 350 Foxtrots, which is an all source intelligence technician. So if you're a 35 Foxtrot, that's a field you can assess into. 352 November, which is a signal intelligence analyst tech. And so if you're a E5, 35 November, 35 Papa, or 35 Quebec, that's a field you could assess into. 351 Limas, counterintelligence technicians, and they assess from a 35 Lima. A 351 Mike, which is a human intelligence collection technician, they assess from 35 Mike enlisted MOS. And a 353 Tango, which is a military intelligence systems maintenance. So they work on all the systems, the hardware, the maintenance stuff that collects all the intelligence. So there's a plethora of MOSs available. But the problem we're having is that you have to hold that particular MOS and be a certain rank to assess to. And our pool that we assess from is so small in the MI community that makes it tough. So but we are assessing. As a matter of fact, we have probably four candidates between the last federal recognition board that'll be going through the warrants for candidates school count. So we are gaining some ground, but there is a definite need. So
we're speaking with the Minnesota National Guard's Command Chief Warrant Officer Kip Knutson on Minnesota Military Radio. So Chief, just so I can feed this back to you in English, you're using a lot of the military acronyms on me.
Apologize.
That's okay. Any future warrant officers come from the enlisted ranks. And in the areas where you need warrant officers, they have to come from a similar MOS or military occupational specialty.
Yes.
You don't just hire them off the street.
No.
So if you have future needs such as cyber that you know are just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, does the recruiting command know that you need to fill in the enlisted ranks with plenty of cyber people so that you can choose from them in the future?
Yes. As a matter of fact, yes, they have a list of the vacancies we have, but also of future planning. I know there's potential in the very near future of adding a cyber protection team to the state, which is going to add like another 15 signal warrant officer positions. So I'm working with a branch manager for the signal branch in the state, and we're going to go out and do some one-on-one recruiting to assess more warrant officers in there, because we can fill two deep at the W1 level, so we can have a person double slotted, as they say, at the W1. So we can actually build our bench for the near term. So
Chief, it's also my understanding that because of budgetary reasons at Congress, that the Army is going to be cut back some over the next couple of years, or potentially cut back. When those enlisted people are in your specialties, do you have an opportunity to pull people in from other states or from active duty to join the Guard?
We do, and fill? As a matter of fact, there's when a soldier leaves active duty, is they have to do an actual interview with a recruiting for the reserve components. One of their checklists prior to getting out. So they actually offer them, say, "Hey, have you ever thought about staying in the military and going and becoming a warrant officer?" So they have a particular feeder MOS, as I said, the enlisted technical skills. Have you ever thought about becoming this? And so there's a list that they look through which states are needing warrant officers in that special, or if they're going back to certain states, say, "Hey, contact this person here." So yes, there is a means of trying to offer that out there to the soldiers that are getting out of the military.
And keep some of that experience transfer from active duty enlisted to Minnesota National Guard warrant officer.
Better yet, if they're a former warrant in the Army, it saves us a lot of money, a lot of training, a lot of experience. If we can kind of keep them in the military and assess them directly in as a warrant officer, so that would be a win-win.
Chief, I think I'd ask my another chief warrant officer in military intelligence if he wanted to go out to the Pentagon and nose around for the next couple of years and find you some candidates.
We're
probably not allowed to do that.
We're doing fairly well compared to other states. We're doing fairly well. I mean, we're fighting the fight. Everybody has the same struggles with the MI. Is that there's some reason there's a large the force structure for the MI warrants is larger compared to the enlist and compared to enlisted than some of the other branches. So MI has been a hard one to fill for warrants, but there is a need. There's vacancies out there, and we're continuing. You know, if you're an E5 out there and any of these MOSs, just feel free to contact me or CW3 James Jutnan, who is our warrant officer recruiter for the state.
Chief, we're just about running out of time here. Now, you've been in the military for 38 years, and you were a full-time federal technician for 34 years. Looks like you've had a pretty good career. What would you have to say to our listeners today if they were thinking about a career in the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, I would say it's the best choice I made was to join the Guard. And Minnesota is probably the best state, I think, as far as National Guard. I'm biased, but Minnesota really is great. It's a great organization to be in. Becoming a warrant officer is one of the best choices I made in my military career. Has the challenges, the schooling, and just the ability to be out there and recognized as a leader. I mean, you're a respected mentor and advisor, and it's just very gratifying to be advising commanders and also mentoring NCOs and officers in your field.
Chief, I want to thank you for stopping by today. I think I've got a better understanding of the warrant officer positions within the Minnesota National Guard, and never knew that they needed to come from the enlisted ranks. And you've got a lot of soldiers out there to draw from. I hope you can fill all those vacancies.
Thank you, Tom. I hope so, too.
Thanks for joining us today, Chief.
Thank you.
That was Minnesota National Guard's Command Chief Warrant Officer, Kip Knutson. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll get an update from Minnesota's Vietnam Veterans of America. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
The documentary, Women Serving in War, produced by Twin Cities Public Television and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, recently won the 2015 Upper Midwest Regional Emmy. In this documentary, three generations of Minnesota military women share their stories of service from World War II to Vietnam and to Afghanistan. They also talk about what it's like to go from a war zone to a life back home. We celebrate and thank all the Minnesota women veterans. Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Bob Behrens, president of Chapter 290, St. Cloud, of the Vietnam Veterans of America. He's also the National Vietnam Veterans of America Vice Chairman of Agent Orange Committee and Chairman of the Squadron of Happy Hookers. Bob, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for your time.
We'll get to that squadron in a minute, Bob, but can you tell me about your military service?
I was in the Air Force from 68 to 71. I was a rescue and recovery in Vietnam, and also was classified courier in Germany.
So did you serve one tour in Vietnam?
Yes, I did. Well, I did two tours.
Two tours.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you were out in the thick of it quite a bit.
We got to see quite a bit of the countryside.
And how do you feel about that today?
We did good.
Did good.
We did good.
Attaboy, Bob. How and when did you decide to join Vietnam Veterans of America?
About 6 years ago, we decided that there was an organization out there that could benefit the Vietnam veterans, and it looked to me like they were doing some good, and they were a positive influence in my life, and it was an opportunity to get together with fellow Vietnam veterans and discuss over and talk about the concerns and problems we had as Vietnam veterans, and get together and have a good time and not sit around and talk war.
Bob, I'd heard about Vietnam Veterans of America for a couple of decades before I got close to them and joined, and you probably did too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Are you also a disabled American veteran?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. And some of that came from exposure to Agent Orange.
Very much so. Yes, very much so.
So you know now, at least after the last 6 years, that the VVA, Vietnam Veterans of America, has been working on that issue quite hard for a long, long time.
Yes, they have. It's an issue that, and the concerns that are very near and dear to our hearts and our families.
Well, we're going to come back to that in the second segment and talk a little bit about an Agent Orange update, since you are vice chairman of the Agent Orange Committee. But Vietnam Veterans of America, how many of us are there, and how many are here in Minnesota?
Oh, my gosh. Vietnam Veterans of America, nationwide, I believe, we're probably 800,000 strong. In Minnesota alone, I would say the number's probably close to 4,000 plus.
And it's the founding principle of the VVA is never again will one generation of veterans abandon another.
That's very true. That's very true.
Bob, I don't know about your opinion on this, but my opinion is that after World War II and after Korea, I think the people of the United States had a war hangover, and they were tired of talking about wars. And Vietnam came along, and we went off, and they just really didn't support us and didn't want to talk about it. And as a result, we were treated a little differently than those other veterans. And I think that our generation, yours and mine, have taught the next generation to honor those who serve and to make sure that never again is anyone forgotten.
It was a hard lesson, but it was learned. And right now in today's society and the attitudes of the American public, we honor all veterans, and we do our best, whatever we can, to help all veterans coming home, reestablishing their lives, going on with their family and their careers. So, times are kind of tough. Back when we came home from Vietnam, there was a lot of mixed reviews and attitudes about the Vietnam veteran. But Tom, you need to realize one thing: we are Vietnam veterans, we're disabled veterans, but we are also Vietnam proud. We're all proud of what we did. We were asked to serve. We did it under the best of our abilities. And we came home and we got on with our lives and we went forward. And we still, to this day, when you talk to another Vietnam veteran, you always say, well, welcome home. But the underlining accent of that is welcome home, job well done. So we are Vietnam proud.
We're speaking with Bob Behrens, president of Chapter 290, St. Cloud, Vietnam Veterans of America on Minnesota Military Radio. Bob, I want to thank you for coming in today. We were scheduled to talk to the department commander for here in Minnesota of Minnesota Military on Minnesota Military Radio, and that's Jim Fisher. He had a little surgery a couple of months ago, and he's had some complications. How's he doing?
I talked to Jim yesterday. He's doing real well. He had a couple little setbacks. But he's in good spirits. He's getting better day by day, and he's looking forward to finally getting discharged from the VA hospital and getting boots back on the ground, so to speak, and spending time with his family during the holidays and coming back here and visiting with you, Tom.
Well, he's a great guy. We've had him on the show several times, and we're looking forward to having him back, but
yes,
very happy to have you here today.
Thank you.
Can you tell us your Chapter 290 up in St. Cloud? How many members do you have and what kind of things you're doing up there?
Well, Chapter 290 in St. Cloud. We've got about 180 members. We're a vibrant, exciting chapter. We've got a lot of things going on from school scholarships that we've been offering to we do a monthly pizza party up at St. Cloud VA. We've been doing that for about 11 years now. We sponsor veterans on a lake, a fishing trip, where we once a year we take about 30, 25 to 30 disabled veterans up to the resort up in Ely, Minnesota on Fall Lake, Veterans on a Lake. We've been sponsoring that. That program's been going on for about 50 years. Next year will be the 50th year. So we've been sponsoring that for quite a few years. We participate and sponsor in the deer hunt up at Camp Ripley. That's always been a good time. Trolling for troops. That's always a fun time that we're fortunate we get to participate in that. Chapter's been around for about 28 years. So I'm sure a lot of folks are familiar with Lake George in St. Cloud. That's the Vietnam Veteran Memorial. We sponsored that. We built it. We funded it. So we're very proud of that. We also been doing, for about the last 11 years, baskets around Thanksgiving and Christmas. We take out gift baskets to different variety of all-age veterans, and it's just it's a good program. We put a lot of smiles on people's faces by when we show up with the baskets. We have a school outreach program that we're very proud of, where we are invited to different schools throughout Minnesota. We go in and we talk about the Vietnam War. We talk about the history of it, experiences. We bring along draft notices. If a person or a child in school asks questions, we automatically give them a draft notice. So that brings up a lot of questions, because you're dealing with kids now that don't have any idea what it's like to be all of a sudden you're drafted. You're 18 years old and you're drafted. So these are some of the good programs that we have going. It's an exciting chapter. We get together once a month on the first Tuesday of every month at the VFW in Sauk Rapids, and we have a lot of fun.
Bob, I understand your group found a need, and you created and put out some drop boxes for flags.
Yes, that's been an exciting venture for us. We have three of them, one at City Hall in St. Cloud, one at the Whitney Center, and we also have one at Texas Roadhouse in Wade Park, and that's been a very successful program. People stop by and drop off the discarded flags, and then we, once a year, have a ceremony in Foley at the VFW, and we do the proper disposal of flags with that. But that's been a very good program. It's been very successful and supported by the communities.
And you're helped out by the fire department, I understand it, for the proper disposal of the American flag after it's worn out.
Yes, yes. They know how to burn.
They do know how to do that. And I'll bet a few of those folks are Vietnam veterans and veterans of other wars as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Bob, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you about being chairman of the Squadron of Happy Hookers, whatever that might be, and get a little update on you being the vice chairman of the Agent Orange Committee. We're speaking with Bob Behrens, president of Chapter 290 St. Cloud VVA on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking to Bob Behrens, who is the president of Chapter 290 of the Minnesota Vietnam Veterans of America. And he's also the National Vietnam Veterans of America Vice Chairman of Agent Orange Committee. Bob, I want to get right into Agent Orange. Are there any updates? What's going on?
We've got two bills up in H.R. 1769 and Senate Bill 901. Right now, both these are in subcommittee on the military personnel side with the Veterans Affairs. These are an ongoing bills that we have very good optimistic views that they will eventually get passed. But it's been an uphill battle for quite a few years to get these bills passed. The toxic research bill deals with the effects of Agent Orange. Of course, as veterans, we know firsthand that Agent Orange is an ongoing ill effect. Vietnam Veterans of America, we've led the charge on this important issue for veterans. And now for our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, since this toxin stays in our gene pool for up to 6-7 generations. When we came home, the deadly toxin was in our blood, and it was generically passed down to our children. After many town hall meetings that's been held across the country to inform all the Vietnam veterans what is happening and what the symptoms are. Tom, I don't know if you realize it or not, but there's about 86 different symptoms from Agent Orange, ranging all the way from spina bifida to webbed fingers, webbed hands. You've got Williams, all the way down to Williams syndrome. You've got cleft lips, cleft foot. It's a dioxin that just you can't get rid of it. It's an organic dioxin that's in our system. In Vietnam, from 1962 to 1971, we sprayed about 11 million gallons of this Agent Orange, Agent Blue, Agent White, and each had its own specific purpose. There was the program was called Operation Ranch Hand. It was sprayed not only by fixed-wing aircraft, but rotary helicopters, trucks, backpack sprayers. It was used to clear vegetation on and around fire bases. But the history of Agent Orange goes all the way back to World War II. We were using this in World War II. We used it in Korea. We used it in Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, Philippines. We even sprayed quite a few million gallons here in the United States. So this is an ongoing program that the Vietnam Veterans of America and Vietnam Veterans Chapter 290 and all the chapters throughout the nation. This is a program that is very near and dear to our heart because as Vietnam veterans, we came home. We've got these illnesses. We've got cancers. We've got skin diseases and everything else. And as a Vietnam veteran, we kind of build a bridge. We get over it. We'll deal with it. But now all of a sudden, you're dealing with our children. This is affecting our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren. So now you've hit a nerve on the Vietnam veterans. We have got to get this toxic research bill passed. We have, and let's start getting some help and aid for our children.
Bob, I'm glad you're out there working on that stuff. And I know we've teased this a little bit earlier that you're chairman of an organization called the Squadron of Happy Hookers. And it sounds funny, but it's really a fundraising effort to help our children, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a fun meet and greet. It's the Squadron of Happy Hookers. And what we do is we make and market and sell fishing lures and keychains, fobs, and earrings. And all the money is raised goes to various organizations such as the Shriner Hospital who help these children. It's a fun group. The title of the Happy Hookers, when somebody sees that patch, their curiosity is piqued. So it's a group of people. We're international. We're in Finland, Australia, Canada. We've got about 80-some people here across the United States. And it's a fun group. We get together. But the bottom line is we know that all the proceeds help the children.
Bob, we're running out of time today. I want to thank you for sitting in for VVA Minnesota Department Commander Jim Fisher. We wish him well and hope to see him back on the show sometime very soon. Just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Be well, do good, and thanks for your time, Tom. We appreciate it.
Bob, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, and thanks for visiting with us.
Thank you.
That was Bob Behrens, the president of Chapter 290, St. Cloud Vietnam Veterans of America, Minnesota, and also the vice chairman of the Agent Orange Committee, and good to hear that they're out there working hard on behalf of all of our Vietnam veterans. Joining me now from the VA Healthcare Center is Ralph Huesner, the public affairs officer there. Ralph, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be with you.
Sorry we missed Director Kelly today, but I know he wanted to talk about some things that were happening around the country called Access Standdown. Can you tell us what that is?
Yes, this past Saturday, November 14th, VA medical centers around the country held what we called an Access Standdown. It wasn't like a typical homeless standdown. This was more for administrative purposes. We took the day, actually for several days prior to the 14th, looking at our wait times, specifically urgent care cases, critical care cases. We were fortunate that we had very few cases waiting 30 days plus. So before the 14th, we looked at the wait times, the appointment calendar, and addressed any case where a patient was waiting 30 days plus. We had very few, less than a handful of cases. They were all resolved prior to Saturday the 14th. But it was a good opportunity for us to look at our procedures and to address the issue of wait times, which continues to be an issue throughout the country in the VA.
So this was a countrywide test to see how many people were had to wait longer.
Exactly. There were some medical centers that actually brought in large numbers of patients. Fortunately, we didn't have to bring any in on that day. However, we had teams here to address any issues, any patients who came in thinking that this was a regular type of stand down. It went well.
Good work. Sounds like a good report.
Yes, sir.
Ralph, seems like every time I come out there, there's some kind of construction project going on at the medical center. What are you up to now?
The newest project is the result of moving the compensation and pension clinic over to the Whipple building. That space in the third floor is now under construction for a comprehensive pain management program. We're calling it the Comprehensive Chronic Pain Rehabilitation Program. 24,000 square feet. This is going to be the largest renovation in the history of this building, which opened in 1988. We expect it will be completed in less than a year. This will allow us to expand the services for individuals with chronic pain problems.
Ralph, you've had the director wearing his construction hard hat ever since he arrived. You're gonna clean up some of this construction pretty soon?
Well, as long as we continue to expand, the basic problem is this building was built for 800 inpatients. The inpatient philosophy has changed, shorter inpatient stays, so we're changing inpatient rooms into outpatient clinics. So it's going to continue for the foreseeable future.
Ralph, the last time I had the director on, quite often this year, he's talked about these town hall meetings that he's had. He says that he learns a lot from them. Do you have any scheduled, and where are they going to be?
The next one will be on December 9th at the Whipple Federal Building, which is on the Fort Snelling Upper Post. This is an event where we have the Medical Center, the Regional Office for VBA, and the National Cemetery Administration. Folks, the leadership will be there to respond to questions and concerns of veterans. 4 to 6 p.m., arrive early. There is security processing, and there should be ample parking at that hour. It's an opportunity for us to hear firsthand and respond firsthand to veterans' concerns. This will be the sixth town hall since September of 2014, and we plan to continue.
Very good. Ralph, thanks for joining us today, and please greet Director Kelly for us.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
Thank you. That was Ralph Huesner, the Public Affairs Officer from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Center. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Chief Warrant Officer Kip Knutson, Bob Behrens, Ralph Huesner from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Center, Commissioner Larry Shelleto of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. All of us here at Minnesota Military Radio wish you a happy Thanksgiving and ask you to please join us next week for a special show marking the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at minnesotamilitaryradio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at minnesotamilitaryradio.com.